This month on the CIO podcast, we had Cheryl Nifong on. She is her acting chief information security officer. Jeff and I talked to her about her past, how she got here, her experience. Then we kind of touched into the phishing that's been happening at UTA. And then we asked her how students and also staff can better protect ourselves. We also talked about social media and data mining, a lot of broad topics here. We talked about, you know, the kids and how they're a little bit more affected or by these things because they're a lot more open with their socialness, you know, internet sociability and all that, things like that. So anyway, go ahead and check it out. It's an awesome conversation. If you guys have any future topics for us, you can email me directly, tom.george@uta.edu, and we'll try to get those on future podcasts. So without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on Jeff Nalen.
It's O with the CIO, a semi-monthly breakdown of all the things you ought to know. Starring Jeffrey Nalen, with monthly special guests. Production work by Tom George.
Welcome to the CIO podcast for a new month. The new month is December. We're almost at the end of the year. I want to introduce my host of the show, Jeff. Jeff, how are you today?
Great. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Good
happy
to be here.
Happy holidays to you as well, too. Now, Jeff, we haven't had one of these in a number of months, and I'm looking directly at you. Your schedule's too busy. What is going on?
That's not true. We've only missed one month.
Yeah.
We've been very consistent at your prompting, which I really appreciate.
So in October, I think you had some business travel. My question to you is, did you go to a conference or one of those kinds of things?
That was over a month ago. I have no idea.
I knew you were going to say that as well, too. So, I know a person in your position, you probably get invited to a lot of conferences and different things like that. Is that true?
I do, but, you know, I have yet to be invited to Scotland or Hawaii. You know, I get
so
to
the
go
good
to,
places.
Yeah, I get to go to Austin. You know,
Aruba. You know, come on.
Come on, yeah, let's see something fun.
Step up. Yeah. You know what I mean? So really quickly, in these conferences, do you still enjoy them? Do you learn anything, or are you just there for the actual merchandise and swag?
Both. We do learn a lot. I will tell you that, you know, there are conferences, and then there are UT system conferences.
Oh, wow.
I learned different things in both organizations. You know, we really have a lot of talented people inside UT system. Mm-hmm. We don't always get to take advantage of that skill set and that knowledge. And so I'm really glad that, you know, Cheryl, who you'll be talking with here shortly, is making connections, and also that other people in IT are making connections in different roles across, you know, the whole UT system. So great value there from those conversations.
Anyway, we're really glad to get back together to have a quick topic before the end of the year. And this month, we have Cheryl Nifong. Every time I say your last name, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I said that wrong, but Nifong's on the call or the show today, and she's going to be talking about the security mindset. Now, Cheryl, introduce yourself. Say hello to everybody.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Nifong. I'm the Acting Chief Information Security Officer here at UTA, and thanks for inviting me to your podcast.
Now, she
acts like a great Chief Information Security Officer.
Yeah. I want to take that acting out of there. Chief Information Security Officer. Now, you just replaced Bobby Adamala, who went on to the Ivy League, Cornell. Congratulations, Bobby.
Yes.
You missed out on this opportunity to be on this podcast, so I'm sure he's really upset about that. Probably not, though. Anyway, so Cheryl, you're relatively new. You and I kind of started around the same time.
We did.
How's it been working at UTA? You still enjoy it? Or
absolutely.
Yeah?
It's a good place to be. I was in a little bit of shock coming to higher ed, but I've learned a lot along the way over the last almost 2 years.
Right.
So it's good.
Well, tell us about your background. Where are you from? Where was your stop before this? What's your experience?
Okay. Well, I've been in information security for about 20 years. I started a firewall company way back. We won't talk about the year. So I was at a firewall company, worked there for 10 years, did a lot of perimeter security, network security, and then I moved on to municipal government. I worked for a city for about 5 years and did perimeter security, firewall security, and network security.
Right.
And then I kind of moved from that operational role into a governance, risk, and compliance. And did that a little while at the city, and then I moved to a healthcare organization in the area, and I spent 5 years there really running and helping out with their risk management department.
And I remember you told me that you were actually a network engineer for a period of time. Is that correct?
Yeah, when I worked for the city.
Yeah, so you have a lot of experience with the operational side of IT and things like that. So do you like that side more than this side, or do you like this side more than that side?
Oh, that's a tough question. It's one of those things that you wake up one day and you're 30 or 40 and you think, wow, I really want to get a little more sleep. And so then you move to the risk management side of things.
Right.
And it was just a new domain and I wanted to do something different. And it's actually very good to move into that space because you have the whole spectrum of security. You have the operational side and then you have the risk management and the compliance side. So
right.
It makes a good, well-rounded security person, right?
Yeah, a good CISO is not just about security. They have to understand the whole platform, the operational side, as she said, and also all the rules around the information security. And, you know, I think my one comment to all the CISOs is, why can't you just make people honest? Then we don't need this job.
We don't have to worry about
that. That's a hard thing to do. Well,
well,
and I was going to say, For about 2 years while I was at the hospital system, I actually did IT operations. I was the manager over an entire IT operations, and that was an eye-opener because I was able to see security from the customer's perspective, and that was actually a very valuable role for me because then I was able to see roadblocks that users had in implementing security, and so I was able to see security more from a business angle
right.
than just security, and that really was a great experience.
Right. So kind of dovetailing on that one. In the world of security, is there anything new that we should be mindful of? What's happening? This might be a broad little stroke here, but what is happening in the world of security? What should we know about?
Well, I think the attackers are getting smarter. They're using information. They're making things look more legitimate. And so I think from higher ed, I think one of the biggest issues we deal with is phishing attacks, and they're getting smarter. I mean, mm-hmm. they're not as with misspellings. They don't have, you know, they're actually spoofing people's email addresses.
They're getting better at
legitimate.
English.
They're getting better at English. That's
right.
What I was trying to, I was like, how do you say that nicely?
No, that's the way you say it. I just saw, like, I actually called Apple about this.
Yeah.
I got an Apple ID security alert on my email, and it looks so legit. And I actually called Apple about it because I was concerned about it. But, yeah, they're getting very good with grammar and English, and they're, like, really, you know, tricking us
now. I have a, you know, and this is something that I'm not sure what the right answer is, a long way from there. But how do you actually manage security in a world where people have grown up with being so open with their information? And in particular, our young students. We're always very concerned about them. And it's not naive. It's just the life that they've grown up in. And then they get out into where they're adults and have responsibilities and money. And I don't think they've been educated on the risk around their identity, their electronic identity, and how to manage that information correctly. So I'm interested to hear Cheryl talk about what's different between higher ed and other places. And is that a big difference, the customer base, or if you want to call them the customers being the students?
I think when I look at back at the healthcare industry, I think there is more focus on the protection of private information, your personal identifiable information. I think people are educated. Maybe there's more security awareness. So I see more of that in the medical space. But I think in the higher ed space, because we want to talk about academic freedom, we want to be collaborative, it's so easy to share information. And I think that people aren't thinking about the bad actors out there and the fact that they're looking for that information. And so I think it just comes down to education. And I think especially with our students, I think we need to start educating not just on protecting university data, but maybe educating them on protecting their personal data.
Right.
And how to do that, because they have grown up in an environment that they share everything. And I have teenagers right now and very active on social media, very active on online gaming. And we've had to sit down and have conversations about what to share and what not to share. And I just think they just don't know.
And Cheryl, you mentioned something before our conversation today. You were talking about some of the things that we don't think about, like, oh, what's your favorite cocktail? Or like, which cocktail is most representative of you? Those types of questionnaire things, which are actually built to possibly pull data from you. And we're so open about it, but we don't know that that's actually, like, data.
So on Facebook, you have all these people ask these questionnaires and they want to know all about you. or you have those third-party apps that link into Facebook, and they're asking, you know, like your favorite band or your, you know, what's your pet's name. You know, they'll start asking for information, and what people don't realize is those third parties, they store that information and they collect that information, and that's why it's so easy for your Google web browser to pop up messages about what your favorite thing is, because they're collecting the data, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a powerful marketing tool, but do you really want that information out there?
There's so many of those. Like, what's your favorite? What Thanksgiving pie would be your, you know, most represented to you? Those kinds of things, you know.
That would be all pies. That's unfortunately.
But yeah, those surveys happen all the time. So Jeff, just really quickly, what is your biggest security concerns here at UTA, and what toolboxes do we currently have to mitigate those concerns?
You know, I think the operational security team inside the IT group has done a really good job of putting the right tools in place. We can monitor, we can do all kinds of, you know, reports that really catch bad actors before they get in it. And I welcome people, come see. We've got, you know, a little mini NOC set up there. You can now see what we're doing in some degree in my office. But really, it's not that much of the technical side. It is the behavioral side that really worries me. And I hear about not only, you know, digital, but people are still calling students and scamming them for large amounts of money.
Yeah.
And so it's that awareness, it's that openness, it's the behavior side, and we've got a lot of work to do in that area. And Cheryl mentioned education. I really believe, you know, you've got the technical side of education. They can read all the information you put out there. Then you have the emotional side. The emotional side happens when somebody steals $2,000 from you. You learn.
Yes.
I would like to get there before they steal the money. And most of the scams these days are really coming from non-technical kind of attacks. It is phishing. It's
social engineering
that you guys were just talking about. And, you know, I think the only way to combat it is through a lot of education and telling good stories about, unfortunately, bad stories about what's happened to others. So, you know, I know Cheryl's got a lot of work on her plate to get that behavioral side out, and I'd be interested to hear about what kind of next steps may be happening there.
Well, I think we actually have a story from something we got in the security inbox, but we had a student, and just is an example, but we had a social engineering attack that was asking them for a part-time job. And I think students are looking for a part-time job, and so I think that they have to be cautious, because it looked legit, and it asked for personal information, and then that student was scammed out of several thousand dollars.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the interesting thing about that particular one was that you have to think about what information you're giving people. And in one of those social engineering, they didn't just ask, they asked for personal information, like where they lived. And I think you have to be really cautious about the things that you provide to people, your phone number, where you live. And so just being diligent and thinking through, does this sound too good to be true? And if it is, it probably is. And I think it's human nature to want to trust people.
Right.
And I think the attackers are getting to that place where they're playing on people's trust. They're preying on that. And I think you have to be a little more cautious and suspicious of things, especially if they seem too good to be true.
Right. And as you know, you just brought up one of the phishing attacks here. Phishing emails have spiked big time at UT over the last couple months. Do you have any idea on why that is? Is there a specific thing that's causing the spike, or is this just like a normal thing that's kind of happening to us at this point?
I really think it may be just the audience. I think the attackers are looking for the easiest way to get information, and because of the academic world is so free with sharing, it's a place that the attacker, I think, looks as a prime target, right? Because maybe they can get through, maybe they can get in, maybe they can get a user to provide information to them. And a lot of it we're seeing is really for financial gain. It's for scamming people out of money. That's really, I think, the motivator that we see most is easy financial transactions. And so if the attacker can get people to provide information, then that's where they're getting their money from, right?
Yeah.
And so I think we have to come alongside of that and look at how do we best educate our users to not fall for social engineering, and it can happen in so many ways. Emails, they can even make phone calls and try to get people to provide information over the phone. And I think one of the things that we can educate on students is I've noticed even in another example that we had some students provide their login information to someone they trusted, right? Even a trusted individual. I think we have to educate students to say, this is your password, this is your login, and behind that login is protected information. So you need to protect that login to protect that information, right?
Is this one of those spoofing emails where they were spoofing like actual legit emails and trying to connect with these people to get information, or is this just...
Usually it comes through the form of email or a phone call, but there are other examples we've seen where there was an example where someone wanted to provide a scholarship to somebody. Well,
nothing wrong with that, right?
Nothing wrong with that. Give me money. But there's a way to do that and a way to not.
Right.
Giving out your login credentials for
hey,
someone.
Give me your Windows password and your social security number and your date of birth, and I have a perfect scholarship for you.
Exactly. So yeah. You have to be careful about giving your information, you know, giving your information out. And I would say your username and password, they're private. You shouldn't be giving that away to anyone.
Yeah. Have you ever fallen for any of these kinds of things in your history?
Of course not.
No,
of course not. No.
Is that the right answer?
Never.
I do want to follow up with that. And I know this is, you know, we're having a good conversation. It's friendly. But these are criminals.
Right.
These are bad people. They are stealing your money. They can steal your identity and make your life difficult for years. So when
decades.
We're talking about this, yeah, it is. I mean, this is a serious thing. And our job, and really Cheryl's, you know, key focus over the next period of time will be, you know, making sure that we help people understand what risk they run and how to protect themselves.
Right.
You know, I've got a password protector system now that I didn't have 6 months ago or maybe a year ago. But, you know, my passwords are now, you know, 30 characters long because...
So it's not password 123 anymore?
No, it was 1234. Or no, what was it, 1111? I forgot. Yeah, into my bank account. Yeah, great. But, you know, it has happened to me. People have filed false tax returns on me, and it almost lost me the purchase of a house because I couldn't get a valid tax return.
Wow.
I have no idea how they did it. You know, I'm sure my Social Security number is out there somewhere. So you've got to really take precautions. And you know, don't just think about technical security as malware and antivirus and that kind of, you know. No, this is people coming after you in particular. And it's easy for them to send out 10,000 emails. And, you know.
It only takes the one person to reply.
It's a good return on their investment.
Right.
But these really are criminals. So this is very serious business.
Right. And Cheryl, what is your office doing to kind of combat this and train the students and things like that?
So this year was the first year that we have hired a training and awareness coordinator. And so this is going to be one of our strategic initiatives for 2020 and moving forward. And so with that new hire, we're going to be starting to do security training and more security awareness. And we've already done two security booths since Lori joined us. And so I expect to see more of that. We're going to get in and do activity fairs. We're going to meet students. We're going to be getting that message out.
Yeah, that's very important. Really quick. So both of you guys, this is a question for both of you guys. Both of you
Are
guys
we on
have
the clock?
Kids.
And do we have like a bell we got to ring?
No. So both of you guys have kids, okay? What scares you about the modern world and technology involving your kids and all kinds of stuff? Cheryl, if you want to go first.
He's pointing at me, so I have to go first. I have daughters, and so I think for me the scary thing is having online friends, doing online activities, and you as a parent, you absolutely cannot have your head in the sand. You have to know what your kids are doing. And my first one, when she was in junior high, she got really upset with me because I spied on her. I had spy software on every one of her phones, her computer. I knew where she was at all times. I knew what she was logging into. I ran logs on the firewalls, and she was so upset. But it was really more about protecting her from herself because
right.
I think kids tend to be naive, right? Until they know or have been educated, they just don't know what's right and what's wrong in terms of the release of information out there. And so I have a younger one who's just super savvy on the computer and loves online gaming. And
what does she play?
She plays Roblox most of the time. And so I had to teach her, don't use your real name. don't accept friend requests from anybody that you don't actually know in person.
Right.
And so we've had to coach, and I'm like, don't tell them where you live. And so there's lots of conversations that a parent needs to have. And I'm learning, I have less technical controls with my younger one and more conversations. I think you need to do both. Put some things in place to protect your kids. You know, there's a lot of things out there. Disney Circle is great. You can actually do content filtering so they can't get to things they shouldn't see when they're young. Mm. And it also does timeouts, so you can actually go to the circle and hit stop internet for your whole family, and you can make them come down to dinner and actually do things face-to-face, right?
Right.
And so there's a lot of tools out there, technical tools, to be able to track and know what's going on with your kids.
Have you messed with the Screen Time app? Are you guys on iOS?
We are on iOS.
Yeah, have you messed with the Screen Time?
I haven't, but
yeah.
I need to.
So I have a problem with touching my phone, looking at my phone. I don't know if it's because I'm a millennial. Probably it's because of that. So what I did was I limited myself to social media to 1 hour a day using the Screen Time app. So
nice.
After 1 hour, it literally just dies. There's no way to do it. And I told my wife to put in the passcode. So the only way I can bypass that is I know, I'm 36, I probably shouldn't do this. But anyway, I knew it was like an issue with me,
yeah.
So I was like, man, I got to do something about this. So
I'm going to look that up, because I have a 12-year-old that has struggles with screen
time.
Right?
Yeah,
I think you should do more FaceTime.
FaceTime.
Like we're doing now. This
yeah.
is much better.
Yeah. It's a thing that nobody does anymore. It's like actually having personal conversations. We're so used to using apps and different things like that.
Yeah, I love that commercial where the guy knocks on the door and he says, just fine. And he says, you're answering my text, aren't you, in person? I go, yes,
oh, I see
that's,
that.
That's good. I wanted one thing, and Cheryl, I would absolutely agree with. We use a different product. We use NetNanny for our daughter, and it's working very well, but it takes some time to set up. But I just remember the conversation I had with her a couple of years ago or more where, hey, what are you doing? Well, I'm online with my friends. So tell me about this friend. How'd you meet him? I met him online. That's not your friend.
Yeah.
You don't know this person. To them, it is this is a nice person. They're online. We're sharing
right.
videos of, you know,
exactly.
singing. And I'm going, huh. Yeah, we're stopping that.
Did she do TikTok?
I have no idea what she does.
Oh, that's a big thing in our
That's
world.
Like a big, big thing. I don't have the app. I don't even know what it's for. But it seems to be like just people singing songs and dancing.
It's just a 25-second clip of doing something. And my daughter made my husband and I account just so we could like her TikToks. So.
Oh, wow.
So you're talking to the wrong generation here about TikTok. I don't really want people, and nobody wants to see me doing something for 25 seconds.
So you just have the conversation with your daughter. Say, hey, you know, you got to be vigilant, those kinds of things, and that's kind
well,
of...
Well, and we monitor it, and we do all the things Cheryl was talking about. And some of the time, yeah, we do what you were talking about. We limit the screen time,
yeah,
those kind of things.
That's huge.
We actually, and this shows my age, but at dinner we play board games.
Oh my
oh,
god!
We do too.
Yeah,
we
so
love board games.
Yeah, so we put away all the electronics and we actually have games we play almost every night.
Which board game is the one that's on the Nayland dining table today?
Oh god, there's so many, but we play Sorry a lot.
Okay.
Because you don't have to think a lot while you're eating and you have conversations. There's a card game called Rat-a-tat-cat, which was introduced as a very early childhood game, but it's a fun game to play. She likes playing BS with cards, so we do that kind of stuff too. But she gets to pick. We just
Just important that you're actually doing something that doesn't involve screens.
Yes,
you know. So
we have a real fun one. We use story cubes sometimes at dinner, and they have pictures on the dice, and you roll the dice, and you go around the table, and you. And you make a story up, and we have some very fantastic stories.
So if we can go back now to UTA and us employees, what do you think UTA employees can do to, you know, better protect ourselves from social engineering, phishing, and also our assets? What are some of the things that we can actually physically do?
So I'll address the students. I think from the student side, I think you just need to be more vigilant about protecting your personal data. And it's not just about protecting UTA data. We really want to provide education to our student body,
mm-hmm.
not only to protect UTA data, but to protect their own, to actually give them life skills as they, you know, move into adult and move into a career, have bank accounts and money that they know how to protect that information, right? And so I think I can address the phishing probably is our biggest attack vector right now. And so I think from phishing, I think students really need to be paying attention to what emails they're getting. And don't click on links that are unfamiliar. You know, look at the email. Does it look legitimate? And even like your Apple one, You know, if it, even if it looks legitimate, but you're not expecting it,
right?
Have suspicion there. Call the company, see if they've actually sent you something. Most companies won't actually directly solicit you for information.
Right.
And so I think that's something they need to know. I'm just looking at the email. You can actually hover over a link and look at it and see if it looks suspicious. I think one of the harder things now is we have a lot of spoofing of legitimate email accounts.
Yeah, that's the one that gets me too.
So it looks, there was one recently where it looked like it was coming from a dean. And so I think you need to look at the content of the message and think, would this person be sending that to me? Why would they be asking that?
A part-time job request from a dean.
And maybe you just need to get on the phone and call that person and say, hey, did you send this to me? Because I think, you know, have that face-to-face conversation or, you know, ask if you're unsure. And I think the other thing is just because of the social media and that's the way they grew up, I think you need to have protections. I think if you talk to some students, they don't have any protections on their accounts, like Facebook and Twitter. They don't have privacy. So I would highly recommend learn the privacy settings in your social media accounts.
Right.
Make sure the things you're sharing are, you know, with people you know. I mean, I go through my Facebook account regularly and look at people that are on my friend list and like, do I really know that person? I don't think I want to. And I unfriend people quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I would also say if they want, there's a couple of segments of what I was going to say. One is I found a podcast, not as good as yours.
Yeah, obviously this is the greatest podcast ever.
Ever. and, you know, it's called The Snapchat Thief.
Oh, wow.
Go listen to it. It's on, I think I found it on Reply All under that group. But the other thing is, you know, a couple of things. One, I would encourage students, if you want a great career, get into information security because it's going to be around for a long time.
Yeah.
The other is we will be rolling out two-factor, so I want to make sure that, you know, Cheryl and I are working on how do we roll out two-factor for just about every application, but we'll be starting with the MyMav and then also moving into email, and then we're going to be looking at, you know, what else do we need to really protect, because two-factor makes it harder for thieves and criminals to steal your identity and your money.
Right.
Remember, they're after your money.
Yeah. And to add on to that, I would highly recommend students use two-factor in their personal lives, too, on their email, on their banking accounts.
You can use it on Gmail and things like that if
you can. And
I opt into it.
Highly recommend to opt into those features, because then if someone is trying to get into your account because you have two-factor enabled, you get notified that someone's trying to get in. And I definitely recommend it for banking information.
So, Cheryl, tell us about your Shorthorn article. I think it was called Cyber Hygiene. I tried to find it. I was, you know, as a good interview, I was like, let me read this article so I can actually know what to speak about. But I couldn't find it. So anyway, could you talk to us about what did you discuss in your cyber?
You're not going
to
be a good thief. You know that.
I'm a terrible thief.
Well, we've actually covered some of it already, but it was really more focused on...
I would be
on
a good victim, though, for sure.
I think we hit on some of it. Really, the article was just really alerting students to be really vigilant about their data and protecting their data, really looking at not clicking on links, not providing their personal information, using two-factor authentication. So I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, so we covered it. All right, guys, one last question before we close up the show today. 26 minutes already into it. Time flies when you're having fun, right? Okay, data mining. Selling personal information to target ads directly is a very common thing. Jeff, Cheryl, you know this. What are your thoughts on that? Do you see it as a benefit or an infringement of privacy? And we'll go to Cheryl, and then we'll get Jeff's thoughts on it.
That is a really tough question, and I have two answers for that. So from a business perspective, I think the more data we have, the more data we can aggregate and find out patterns of behavior. Right, and so if we're looking at a criminal, they're looking for an in, right, into the network, into users, trying to get users' information for monetary gain. So if we can aggregate all of that data to look at what is normal user behavior, then it's easier for us to look at what is suspicious behavior. So by having all of that data analytics, it provides a very powerful tool. Information is powerful, right?
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
So I think, you know, obviously our bad guys or bad actors out there, you know, They're using that data to try to get in. And so I think from our perspective, if we can take the data we have and use it to look at analytics and to look at user behavior, we have a better chance of being able to detect bad behavior, suspicious behavior before something happens, like the money gets transferred, right? Or somebody gets scammed out of money, to be able to detect it on the front end. From a personal side, I think that's really up to the user. And we know we talked about this earlier about the Facebook, you know, Facebook apps.
The targeted apps.
The targeted apps trying to get your information.
I don't mind it. Just so you know, I just wanted,
you think
I like
great?
It. I think it's pretty good because now it's like, at least I'm seeing the things that I'm actually interested in. You know what I mean? As opposed to just random, like, tents and camping and stuff like that. Like, if I'm looking at electronic skateboard because I Googled it and now it shows up on the Facebook feed, it's not that bad, you know? So I don't mind it, but I can understand.
So let me ask you something, though. How much money do you think the people who have your information make off of it?
Probably some.
A lot more than
you
do.
Because I actually just bought some pants.
And they're very good-looking pants, if that's the pants.
Yeah, and they're like, you know, I was looking for pants. And
not
that
I'm looking
at pants. I saw a Groupon deal. That's totally fine. These are nice pants. I saw a Groupon deal for some pants that showed up on my news feed, right? I clicked on it, purchased some pants. And I looked at it like a good idea because it's like, man, I was looking for pants. Now I found a good deal on some pants. Now I own these pants. So I don't know. I mean, that's why I was kind of curious to see what your perspective was on that actual thing.
And I think, you know, Googling things like pants or Googling something and then having an ad for it is one thing. I think you have to be cautious, though, when it becomes more protected data. It becomes a personal choice. What do you want out there? What do you want people knowing about you?
Right.
And I think that some of our students in that younger millennial generation, they don't realize that stuff follows you everywhere. Once it's out there, it's really out there,
right.
And it can affect your ability to get a job. If, you know, there's information about you, like if there's information about that you don't want out there.
Yeah, your politics, your interests.
Yes, like your interests. You have to be careful what you post on social media. So I think it just depends on what kind of information you want out there. And I think you have to be cautious about, I think from a shopping perspective, it may be a good thing being able to have targeted ads, but when people start asking for things like personal information, like your home address or even your pet's name or things about your family, I think then you have to start thinking, wait, I might not be wanting to share that information with others.
And they do make a lot of money off your personal information, and we don't see the value in that and being returned to us. At least I don't think so.
No.
So, and maybe I'm too, you know, focused on money, but if they paid me enough money, I'd probably be interested, but
right.
They're not paying me enough money to share my information.
So do you look at it as a benefit or an infringement of privacy?
I look at it as a choice, but I think you have to understand the risk, and I really don't believe people take serious consideration of the risk. I mean, there are lots and lots of examples out there where somebody on Facebook post, here's my dog's name, here's my, you know, mother's maiden name, here's, you know, oh, by the way, we're going on vacation, you know, that stuff really does happen.
Yeah,
and
those are security questions.
That's right.
What's your mother's maiden name?
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
What's your dog's name? You know?
I'm not answering that. I'm not telling you. Not unless you give me $10 and I'll tell you. I really believe, you know, we're in a different age. You have to be serious about protecting your digital identity because it carries with you, as Cheryl said, throughout your life. And like me, I mean, somehow somebody got my Social Security number and filed a fake tax return. I owe taxes, so it didn't matter. But it delayed the purchase of a home that I was trying to buy by about a month because I had to go down to the IRS and clear it up and then bring back a real tax return. So.
Wow.
When I was in college, I had my wallet stolen, and I was really young, and my Social Security card was in my wallet. Mm-hmm. And so my Social Security card got stolen, my driver's license, and it was a really big mess to try to figure out, because you can't get a driver's license.
Yeah, that's everything. So and the
exactly.
Date of birth, everything.
And so since I've been in college, I've had a credit monitoring service, because you just never know. Now they found my wallet, and it was still in my wallet. I guess back then maybe the thief wasn't smart enough to take it, but they did find it, and I was able to get it back.
Yeah.
But I think students might not even know, don't carry your Social Security card in your wallet. That needs to be protected somewhere. I mean, you know, either in a safety deposit box or a
right.
Lockbox. And I just think that they don't know that information.
Why do they still print those Social Security cards on rippable paper? I don't understand that. And you can't even, like, laminate it. You can't do anything to it. If you do, it's like, it makes it not valid. But it's like the cheapest, you know, rippable paper possible. I don't get that. It's 2019, guys.
You really shouldn't try ripping that. I don't know why you're doing that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what if you leave it in your wallet, right? And you put your wallet in the washing machine.
Yeah,
and now, you know, it's gone. It doesn't make any sense. A driver's license made out of plastic. Why can't that be made out of plastic?
I don't know.
recycled plastic.
But since I mentioned credit monitoring, I think that's something that would be a good, it wasn't in the Shorthorn article, but that would be a really good recommendation for students. Because we're in a digital age and so much data is out there, I've had a credit monitoring service for years. And they, if you look at the right ones, some of them do dark web searches and they look for your personal data being compromised and they'll alert you to it.
Right.
So I think that's a really good thing for people to use. It's a small investment to have that protection.
And there are, I just found this out, it might've been there for a long time, but some of the browsers have the ability to go scan and see if they find your personal information like social security number out on the internet.
Right.
So, you know, and they can take advantage of some of these that are just free ads now.
Right.
Free options.
Right. Well, guys, that brings us to the end of the show. I think it was a pretty productive conversation. I want to thank you, Cheryl, for joining us. We're happy that you're on the team, you know. Jeff, do you have anything else to say to send us off in the final part of this year?
No.
And with that, guys, again, more of this next year, new year, more CIO podcasts. And if you have any comments or questions or maybe people that we should bring on and explore and talk to, email us, let us know, and we'll try to bring those individuals on the show to talk.
I want to say happy holidays again. Merry Christmas. And thanks for keeping me
on track. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah, yes.
Kwanzaa. And all the other ones as well.
Yeah. What's the one with the pole and Steinfeld?
Steinfeld was brought up yesterday at the holiday party.
Probably why I remember it less than 24 hours ago.
Festivus. For the rest
Festivus.
Of us.
That's it, yes.
Yeah,
perfect.
Happy Festivus, everybody. You guys have a good rest of your day, and we'll talk again next year.
That's great. Thanks,
see
guys.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on O with the CIO.